During this month of February, we are sharpening the skill of empathy. In our initial study last week, we looked at the definition of empathy. What does it mean? Where did that word come from? We saw that empathy is the intellectual and emotional identification with the thoughts, the feelings, the state of another person. We noted the origins of the word empathy and how it differs from a word that sounds a lot like it, and that's sympathy. They're not the same. They're, in fact, very different. Then we also considered how every Christian has both the capacity to show empathy and also the responsibility to do so. This morning, I'd like to move on to the demonstration of empathy. And this is somewhat similar to our Sunday evening series throughout this month. In our Sunday night messages, we're looking at examples of empathy from the life of Christ. Each week, we're taking an event from the Gospels and showing how Christ demonstrated empathy to the people of his time and what we can learn from that. This morning, though, I'd like to go to the Old Testament and to show where God demonstrates empathy and what we can learn from that. I do that partially by intention, because I know that there are some who have been taught that the God of the Old Testament is a God of wrath and judgment, and he's a stern God, whereas the God of the New Testament is the God of love and forgiveness and grace and puppies and kittens. Almost like there's two different gods in the Bible, and there's not. It's the same God. God has not changed. And we see examples of God's grace, his love, his compassion in both Testaments. Earlier we sang the hymn, "Great is thy faithfulness," talking about the compassions of the Lord that never failed. You know where that comes from? What inspired that hymn? It's a verse in the Old Testament book of Lamentations, probably the last place you'd expect to see a song that uplifts the great faithfulness of God. That's where it's from, because God has not changed. So this morning, I'd like you to turn to the book of Exodus, second book of the Bible. Cindy earlier read for us from chapter 3, and we are going to return to that, but I'd like to begin in chapter 2. Kind of sets the stage for what we read there in chapter 3. Exodus chapter 2, and just to bring everybody up to date, what's going on in the world at this time. At the end of the book of Genesis, Joseph, one of Jacob's 12 sons, had been sold by his brothers into slavery. He ends up down in Egypt. And through a series of events in which God is very much at work, he ends up in a position of power, second only to Pharaoh. And through God's wisdom working through him, he was able to plan for a famine that just swept across the whole known world at that time. And Joseph's brothers ended up coming to Egypt as the only place that had food. And there was a reunion between Joseph and his estranged brothers. He ends up bringing his entire family from Canaan to Egypt to live there. They settle in a good portion of land in Egypt, and God blesses them, and the Israelites grow. But that did not sit well with the Egyptian people. They were afraid that the Israelites might become too strong and overtake them, and so they enslaved them. And they treated them very harshly. Now, in Exodus, we see the story of Moses. Moses is an Israelite, born to a Hebrew woman, at a time when the Pharaoh at that time had said all Hebrew male babies are to be cast into the Nile River. and in a pretty ingenious way of complying with the law, Moses' mother made a little basket, put the baby in it, and put the basket in the Nile River. So in a sense, she was complying with the law, but in doing so, saved his life. He ended up being raised in the palace of Pharaoh, was given an Egyptian education, which was the best you could get at the time. But then he saw an Egyptian slave master abusing an Israelite slave, and it enraged him. And he ended up killing that Egyptian slave master. And he had to run for his life. So he runs off to a faraway land called Midian. That's where he is when we read the end of Exodus chapter 2. Verse 23 says, "During that long period, the king of Egypt died. The Israelites groaned in their slavery and cried out, and their cry for help because of their slavery went up to God. God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them." The Israelites are being oppressed. They are being abused. They cry out to God for help, and it says God heard their groaning. Verse 25 says, God looked on the Israelites and was concerned for them. These verses describe a divine demonstration of empathy. That's really what it's all about right there. Now, I was curious to see what Hebrew term was translated, was concerned about them, at the end of verse 25, because the word empathy doesn't appear itself in the Bible. So I was curious to know what that meant. I actually looked it up in a number of other English translations just to compare how they rendered that phrase. The Holman Christian Standard Bible renders the verse, "God saw the Israelites and he took notice." I don't know, that seems just kind of there, right? The Message says God saw what was going on with Israel. God understood. Okay. The New Living Translation said he looked down on the people of Israel and knew it was time to act. Well, that adds something a little more to the idea. The Contemporary English Version says because he knew what was happening to his people, he felt sorry for them. Now that sounds like sympathy to me, right? We looked at that last week. When you have sympathy for someone, you feel sorry for them. And you know, that doesn't always go over very well. Depends on how you express that sympathy. But actually, the most literal translation of them all is the English Standard Version, which simply says, God saw the people of Israel and God knew. Because that's the Hebrew verb. It's the verb to know, to have knowledge. And we're going to get into that later in the message more deeply. But here we see a demonstration of empathy from God. God saw their suffering, he heard their cries, and he knew what was going on with them. And as we're going to see, I believe we can demonstrate that same kind of empathy ourselves as we interact with people. Now go down to chapter 3, the passage that Cindy read for us. In verse 7, now we're hearing the voice of the Lord. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and again, the NIV says, I am concerned about their suffering. Literally, that is, I know their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me. I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. Divine empathy, you see it in verse 7. I have seen their misery. I have heard their cry. I know their sufferings. These are not just emotions. These aren't just feelings that God has. These are active verbs. This is what God does. He sees, he hears, he knows. One commentator calls this God's intimate attention. He is not just a passive observer. He is intimately involved in the lives of his people. Now, don't misunderstand, saying that God sees and hears doesn't mean that God has giant eyes and ears, all right? God is a spirit. He's not contained into a form or a shape. But God as a spirit has the capacity to see, even though he doesn't have literal physical eyes. He can still hear, even though he does not have literal physical ears. This is so we can understand when it talks about the eyes of the Lord and the ears of the Lord. But he is greater. You see, if God had actual eyes and ears, that would limit him to space and time, and we know God is limitless. But he is a living person. He follows the stream of human events, and he decides at times to get involved. It's time to act, time to do something about it. So I'd like to take a closer look at these three actions of empathy, see how God demonstrates them, and then how we can demonstrate empathy in these ways ourselves. So first, we read that God saw their circumstances. We know that God sees everything. Proverbs 15:3 says, "The eyes of the Lord are everywhere, keeping watch on the wicked and the good." So he's not only watching certain people, he sees everything. He sees everyone. He knows what is happening in every life. Nothing escapes the notice of God. But there's something more than just vision being talked about here. The original Hebrew word is used to translate see and look in the Old Testament. It appears over 1,300 times. It's a very, very common word. And many of those occurrences are just regarding the ability of the physical eyes to see or to not see. It means to see or to look at, but it also brings in the connotations of to inspect, to perceive, to consider. So you're not just glancing at something, you're really looking at it. And at times it even gives you the idea of to learn, to gain understanding by seeing. See, we don't always do that. Our eyes function just fine, but there are things that we see that we really don't notice. This happens a lot to me as I'm driving. My eyes are on the road. I'm aware of what's going on. My wife will say, "Oh, did you see that?" Nope. "But it was right there." Yep. Now, to be honest, I probably did see it, whatever it was. But I didn't pay attention to it. I didn't focus on it. I didn't really observe it. It was just there. And because I'm focusing somewhere else,
it didn't even register. My eyes can see with help. But there are times when even what I see doesn't really enter my mind. It's there, it's gone, and that's it. But when we really see someone, we're going to take notice of them. We're going to be aware not only of their presence, but we want to know what's going on in their lives. See, that Hebrew word can refer to perceiving or ascertaining something apart from just seeing with our eyes. This is seen in Genesis 26, 28. We saw clearly that the Lord was with you. Now, they didn't see the Lord, but they perceived. They came to the conclusion that the Lord was with them. How? By what they saw. Job 4:8 says, I have observed those who plow evil and those who sow trouble reap it. This is learning by observation. I have seen these things take place, therefore I've come to the conclusion that this is right. So that idea of seeing is a lot more than just light waves going into our eyes and being interpreted by the brain. You could call this intellectual seeing. I see, I recognize, maybe I learn or I perceive. We see a Greek equivalent in John 4:19 where the Samaritan woman at the well says to Jesus, I can see that you are a prophet. That doesn't mean that Jesus had prophet written across his forehead that she saw with her eyes. She could perceive because of how he acted that he was a prophet. You see, even a deeper meaning of this verb in Genesis 11:5, the Lord came down to see the city and the tower that the men were building. This is the Tower of Babel. Well, it wasn't that God had to come get a closer look. He came to inspect. He came down to really see what's going on here. And that's what we would call intellectual seeing. There's another side, though. I just gave it away. There's emotional seeing. An example of this is in Genesis 21, verse 16. Hagar, remember this was Sarah's servant, that Sarah had the brilliant idea, well, if I can't give Abraham a child, maybe she can. And she did. They named him Ishmael. And after a while, things didn't go well. And Sarah told Abraham, get her and her kid out of here. And she was sent off in the desert. She was at her wit's end. It looked like her boy was going to die. And she says in Genesis 21:16, she went off and sat down nearby about a bow shot away, for she thought, I cannot watch my boy die. Now, there was nothing wrong with her eyesight. She could see it, but she wasn't about to watch it. That's emotional seeing. The flip side of that, you see in Genesis 43, verse 30, deeply moved by the sight of his brother, Joseph hurried out and looked for a place to weep. These are tears of joy brought on by the sight of his brother whom he hadn't seen in years. So we can feel with our eyes as well as see with them. We observe, but we also can feel. And I think both of these meanings come together when God says in Exodus 3:7, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. He saw what was happening. He had closely inspected what the Egyptians were doing to those slaves. He perceived their misery. And there's a sensitive feeling that makes the Lord aware of Israel's plight. And it prompted him to act. So you have both intellectual and emotional seeing wrapped up in these words. Now, you might be saying, what does this have to do with empathy? All right, that's what God does. I don't have God's ability, so how can I do that? But a large part of demonstrating empathy for us is by seeing. Body language reveals a lot about a person's internal condition. And not just the person that we are reaching out to, but our own body language. We've got to be careful not only what they are projecting to us, but what are we projecting to them? Watch, observe, learn, so that we can perceive. For our part, we need to give undivided attention to that other person. Right? Somebody comes up to you and says, hey, how you doing today? And you start to tell them, and they're looking over here and over there. And all. What does that communicate to you? They're not listening. They don't care. Eye contact, very important when we want to demonstrate empathy. Look at the person. Look them in the eye. We got to watch our facial expression, because they might say something that totally shocks us. But if we show that we're shocked, we might lose a possibility to really listen. Or even worse, they tell us something we don't like, and we respond with a facial expression that's like, ew, I don't like that. Click, they'll turn us off. So we've got to be very careful in not only observing their body language, looking at their facial expressions, we got to be careful of our own as we demonstrate empathy to others. You know, there's a lot that is being communicated beyond what is being said. We need to see intellectually, what can I learn about this person's situation, but also emotionally. What am I seeing that can indicate what they're feeling? Now, for God, He knows. He knows the heart. We aren't God. We don't have that kind of insight, but we can communicate our concern, and we can be attentive when somebody is talking to us, when we're talking to them. It goes a long way in demonstrating empathy. Secondly, according to Exodus 3:7, He heard their cries. See, God not only sees, but He hears. Now, we know from the very beginning, you go back to the beginning of the Bible, our Creator is a speaking God. God said it, and it was so. God spoke to Adam and Eve before and after the sin. He is a speaking God, but He is also a hearing God. Not only had He seen the misery, He heard their cry. And it illustrates the attention, even the tenderness of God. It's echoed in Psalm 34:15. The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and His ears are attentive to their cry. Again, I looked up the original word for hear, and I was surprised to learn what it was, because it's one of about six Hebrew words I actually know. It's the word shema. And it appears in probably the most important verse of the Old Testament to any Jewish person. Hebrews 6:4 says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." It is something they pray every single day, sometimes more than once a day. And the very first word of that sentence is shema. Hear. Listen, O Israel. This is important. You really need to catch this. It's a word that appears over 1,100 times in the Old Testament. And again, a lot of the times it simply means hearing with our ears, receiving sound waves that make sense. But there's a little more to it than that as well. You see little connotations in the way the verb is used. In Genesis 37, 17, a man tells Joseph that he overheard Joseph's brothers say. It wasn't something said to him directly, but he overheard it, and it registered. Shema can also mean to give undivided attention. When Joseph was telling his brothers and his parents about these dreams that he had back when he was a teenager, he uses that word, listen, listen to me. And sometimes people will say that to us. Oh, you really got to hear this. Listen to what I'm saying. We need to hear what people are saying. Shema can also imply to gain knowledge. Just like seeing, we can learn by hearing. And that hearing can be spiritual as well as intellectual. Spiritually, we hear the Word of God. We learn from it. The Spirit of God spoke through the prophet Balaam in Numbers 24, verses 3 and 4. He said, "The oracle of Balaam, son of Beor, the oracle of the one whose eyes see clearly, the oracle of one who hears the words of God." Now, I don't know if Balaam actually heard the words audibly or if he was simply paying attention to them and received them. I would call this spiritual hearing. And there are times when it seems like God is speaking to us, but if we're in a crowd of people, nobody else hears a thing. It's being attuned to God so that when He communicates, we hear it. Even if it's not with our ears. To have a hearing heart is to have discernment and understanding. King Solomon asked of this in 1 Kings 3:9 when he says to God, "So give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish," there's the word Shema, "between right and wrong." Literally, that would be to hear between right and wrong. We say, that doesn't make any sense. But you hear with discernment. You hear more than just the words. Because we've all encountered people that say one thing, but they don't really mean it. Right? "How are you doing today?" "Fine." Yeah. That means anything but fine. Guys, you know this. You come home, you say to your wife, "How was the day?" "Fine." Just turn around and walk back out. Because it ain't fine. "What's wrong?" "Nothing." Oof. Yeah. There's more to it than just the words being said. So we need to be able to hear to discern. Moses told the judges that he established with the Israelite people in Deuteronomy 1:16. When you hear these cases that come before you, it's not just a matter of hearing the words. You've got to be able to discern what's going on. Get beyond the words to the truth. That takes discerning ears. See, there's a difference between hearing and listening. Hearing is the gaining of information for oneself. Listening is caring for someone else, being empathetic toward them. It's showing that you care. And you know, one of the great ways you can show someone you care about them is to listen to them. We need to listen to what's going on behind the words. And that takes real focus. That takes attention. That takes time. That takes effort. It's more than just giving passive or half-hearted attention to the words coming from another person. Effective listening is an active process. It's an intentional process. It's being able to set aside our own conflicts and biases and preoccupations so that we really can concentrate on what the other person is saying. It's avoiding the subtle verbal and nonverbal expressions of disapproval or judgment about what's being said. Even if you really do disapprove of it, When you are listening, you're not communicating that disapproval or judgment. It's listening to the tone of voice. It's listening to how fast somebody is talking or maybe how slow. Listening for things that are being repeated. Listening and looking to their posture, their gestures, their facial expressions. Not only hearing what they're saying, but listening to what they're not saying. Sometimes what a person leaves out is very telling. But we have to be focused on them to do that. Waiting patiently through periods of silence. Isn't silence awkward? Just a few seconds of silence seems like an eternity. But if somebody is overcome with emotion, maybe they break down in tears and they can't speak, or they're trying to find the words to express what's going on and it's just not coming. Wait. Don't try to bail them out. I know you're trying to be helpful, but you don't have to give them the words. Let them come up with the words. Because the words you may think that they're looking for may not be the right ones. But in that moment of awkwardness, they might just take whatever you say and say, yeah, that's what I mean. Silence can actually be a gift. Because you are really listening to what they have to say. And realizing that I may not agree with what the person is saying, I may not approve, I may not appreciate it, but I can accept that person. I can still treat them as a person of value, someone created in the image of God, a soul for whom Christ died. Regardless of what they look like, regardless of what they're telling me, the things that they are experiencing. And that takes focus. That attentive listening is not an easy thing to do. It's not natural either. See, the natural thing is when we are listening, we're processing what I'm going to say next, right? Oh, I need to have something to say, and so I'm just, you know, part of me is listening to them, but part of me is thinking, what's my response? What am I going to say next? The temptation is to interrupt. Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. Really? Even if you do, it doesn't go over well. And most likely you don't. Here's a really bad one. Someone shares with you an experience, and you're like, huh, well, let me tell you what happened to me. Right? There's that temptation to one-up somebody, you know. Oh, that's nothing. Let me tell you this. All that communicates is, I really don't care about you and what you're going through. Listening is so, so very important. James 1:19, there are days I think I should have it tattooed on my eyelids. It is so important. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Boy, all three of those are huge when it comes to expressing empathy. Quick to listen, slow to speak. We have two ears and one mouth. Maybe God was trying to tell us something. And slow to become angry, because, man, it is so easy to let our emotions carry us away. Listen. Listening is one of the most loving gifts you can give to another person.
When we're really focusing on what they are saying, when we're giving our undivided attention, we're not interrupting with our ideas or our advice or our experiences. We are demonstrating empathy. We're really being like God at that moment. And then finally, Exodus 3:7 says that God knew their condition. Again, that's the Hebrew verb to know, yada. And it's a very, very common word. Over 1,000 times it appears in the Old Testament. Yada suggests intimate, personal acquaintance with all the particulars of their suffering. God sees, God hears, God knows. He knows our condition just like he knew theirs. And again, this knowledge, it can be by observing and reflecting, or it can be to know by experiencing. When Noah sent out the dove and it brought back an olive branch, he knew that the waters were abating. He put two and two together and came up with the truth. But there's even a knowledge beyond comprehension. Genesis 4:1 says, Adam knew his wife Eve, and she conceived and bore a son. That's talking about more than just knowing about her. That was a word used for the most intimate knowledge two people can have. And God knows us that well. Now, I'm not suggesting we exercise that knowledge with everybody we encounter. But I am saying that knowledge can go beyond the surface. And when we are truly being empathetic, that's what we're trying to do. You see, empathy refers to our ability to enter deeply into another's subjective world, into their internal frame of reference, to feel with them as sensitively and as accurately as we can. That's what empathy is about. And we do it by seeing, we do it by hearing, we do it by knowing. And it's a focus on them more than an expression of us. That's how God demonstrated empathy, and that's how we can as well. Try not to react based on how we feel about another's problems, but how would I feel if I was in their place? Maybe I don't see things the way they do. You know, their mountain may really be a molehill, but it's a mountain to them. So try to understand where they're at and communicate that understanding. Now, they may eventually say, well, what do you think I should do? Now you have an opportunity to speak. But you have to earn that right, and you earn that right by really seeing them, really hearing them, really knowing them. That goes a long way to helping them.